the Specials Podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcasts or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello everybody, the Specials Podcast is back for another week and some interesting markets to look at this week. Big Brother, as usual, we're whittling the contestants down bit by bit. We're going to have a look at the Royal Specials, of course, because a lot's been decided in the last week. We'll have a look at Spotty and see what we can dig out in terms of value there. And of course, we promised you that we'd talk about architecture this week. And, you know, if there are two people who are qualified to talk about architecture, then it's got to be reality, Rob Dixon and myself. Rob, I mean, we're all about the buildings, aren't we?
Definitely, yeah. Mm. I've studied buildings for many years. I did it at university.
Yeah, I've lived and worked in one most of my life, to be honest. Did you study at university?
No, I didn't get to university.
Okay, fine. That's good. So we start with Big Brother, where we normally start.
Yeah, that's about my level. Let's go back to here.
Yeah. Outrights, first of all, before we look at the next eviction. We have got a very slow internet connection in the studio where I'm working, so I can't tell you the outrights.
I'll tell you the outrights then. I'll do a bit of presenting. This is good.
Yeah, why not?
Gina's still the 11 to 10 favourite now. Sam shortened this week into 9 to 4. Dexter, 8 to 1. Sophie is up for this week's eviction is 12 to 1. Dan, who's favourite for this week's eviction, is 14 to 1. Then you've got 16 to 1 Callum, 16 to 1 Jack and Joe, 20 to 1 Charlie, and Hazel is once again the outside at 50 to 1.
I'm not watching much of it, Rob, but I can't get this Dexter out of my head. He just seems to have been there all the time. Every time I flick it on, he seems to be on the telly as well. I mean, it's one of those where I'm probably going to look back at the end and he wins, and I'm thinking, all right, so I was thinking that all along. Why didn't I actually back it?
Yeah.
But can he win it?
Yeah, probably can. I mean, he's survived sort of three or four evictions now, so there's obviously voting. There's sort of publics behind him. As we said quite a long time ago now, we talked about people having a sort of journey in the house, and his has probably been, him and Gina have probably been more extreme than anyone sort of come in, and you're expecting both of them to go sort of that first week. If you go back to that first week's evictions and stuff, and it was a toss-up between the two which one was going to go at one point. And now they're first and third favourites. And the truth of the matter is quite a lot of the storylines in the house sort of focus around definitely Dexter anyway, and it sort of picks up on it each week. So.
Mm. As far as the eviction goes, we've got Dan, who's the excuse me, Dan, who's the former policeman. He's 1 to 3. Might be a policeman when he comes out, actually, but at the moment he's a former policeman. You've got Sophie at 9 to 4 and Sam at 14 to 1. Sam interests me a little bit. I can understand why Dan is the favourite, because he's more of a divisive character than the other two. The other two are a bit more wallflowerish. But I mean, Sam, I was reading a blog from our friend and one-time podcast contributor at reality_Tim, not reality Rob, reality Tim, and he was talking about that one of the online votes having Sam like around 30%.
Yeah.
If that's the case, he shouldn't be a 14 to 1 shot to go, should he? But
no,
I understand the argument that if it's a vote to evict, does he annoy enough people, or does he even bother enough people for them to pick up the phone?
Probably not. I mean, the 30% was very early on in the voting. It's come back Dan's way now. I think all the polls I've seen have seen Dan clear.
And how reliable have those polls been this series?
This year, yeah, they've not been too bad. We've not really. We've had one pretty close eviction, but the rest have been pretty clear cut. I think Jackie, when she went last week, went as short as 1 to 16.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I think Dan will go. I think. It'd be interesting, a vote to evict is what we do, and that pretty much for me seals Dan's fate, cause I think he does divide opinion quite a lot. A sort of vote to save would have been interesting, because Sophie doesn't really bring too much to the party here, and I think if the voting had been what it had been previously, then Sophie would have been a big danger to go tonight. But I think the edit wasn't overly good for Dan last night, so I think Dan will go.
And they probably want another bloke to go, don't they?
Well, they need a bloke to go, really.
Yeah.
I think the only one that's left is Daly, and he was sort of ejected from the house. So in all the show, the four that have been evicted have all been girls so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dan is, if you, as 1 to 3 shots go, it's decent enough, is it?
I think 1-3. You're not going to get rich back in your 1-3 shots. But I think when all is said and done tonight, Dan, we'll be leaving.
Royal Specials then. Just a recap first of all. Got to tip our hats. I've done it on Twitter already, but to our contributor who did the Royal Baby podcast with me at Royal Reporter on Twitter, the man from the Daily Express, pulled out some beauties. Rob, he said it would be a boy, and it was 6-4. It would be a natural delivery at 6-4. He tipped up if it was a boy, George at 14-1 way back when. There were probably 7 girls' names before you even got to a boys' one because of the thinking on it being a girl. I think he even tipped up Kate to be holding the baby when they came out and blah, 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 blah. So he did really well for us, which was always nice for the punters. You did all right as a company as well.
Yeah, not bad. I think we took over about £400,000. I think the overall figures were on the event. We won 50,000 or 40,000, sorry, on the baby name as well. It was a fantastic book. I was just looking at the figures. There were 4,000 new accounts.
That's incredible.
There was over 42,000 bets staked as well.
Wow.
So,
really good. Great for your figures.
One of the success stories of sort of TV specials over the, we never expected to take that much. I mean, we took probably about 60,000-70,000 on the Royal Wedding, but there's not that many markets you can do. When it is, sort of who the dress designer and over time there wasn't that much you can do. But a sort of baby's name and the fact that they kept it so sort of close. I mean, she'd had the baby for sort of 3-4 hours before anybody had really known. And I mean, we were just betting on the name on that Monday anyway. So obviously, if we'd have been betting on the gender, we might have known it was a boy before the announcement, if something had been leaked. But as far as names are concerned, even when they announced the Royal Baby name on Wednesday, I think it was, then it was kept quiet. We took it down sort of 5 minutes before the announcement, and even looking back through the field books of people who backed George, it didn't look like that there was any sort of nobody had known or anything, so it was good.
It's interesting that you're right. No leaks whatsoever. But it's interesting that there were a couple of gambles, weren't there? I mean, there were a few gambles, but one of the gambles that came in quite late was on Louis, which ended up being one of the names, but not the name. And the other gamble on Alexandra, a girl's name, but actually Alexander is in there. So you wonder if there was a little bit of knowledge somewhere.
The Alexandra girl's name can probably. I think they wanted.
Maybe that was what it was going to be. If she was a girl, maybe that was what it would have been.
I definitely think that was a genuine gamble. Yes. I definitely think they wanted Alexandra as a boy's name.
Because the report...
as a girl's name.
The report is that they didn't know the sex of the baby, did they?
No. So, I mean, obviously they were false. I'm saying they were false. They've obviously made their mind up for George, but obviously having Alexandra as a middle name, then... it was obviously there as well.
Yeah, fascinating market. So hopefully you made a little bit of money on that. There's still markets available as well. There's some really nice ones as well. I mean, there's some that are pretty long range. And there's some markets available on Zara Phillips and Mike Tyndall's baby as well. We're going to stick to William and Kate, though, and Prince George. First of all, William Kate's baby's godparents. So who will George's godparents be? I've done a little bit of work on this. Can be up to 8 godparents. I think Prince Charles has got 8, or William's got less than that. Generally follows a similar kind of pattern to us commoners, friends, close friends, and maybe family as well. We've got Pippa Middleton and Prince Harry at even money each. You've got Thomas van Strobenzee, who's William's best friend, at 2-1. 3 of the Van Cutsem brothers, Eddie, William and Hugh, I think they're all brothers actually, all 3-1. Hugh Van Cutsem is the father of Grace Van Cutsem, the cute little girl who was featured at William and Kate's wedding quite a lot. William is her godfather. And then you've got Elle Spencer at 6-1, Zara Phillips at 8-1. The Beckhams at 16-1 each. Mike Tyndall at 33s. David Cameron at 50s. And Boris Johnson at 66-1. I like Pippa and Prince Harry. I mean, I've read a few articles, Rob, where it said either highly likely or very likely that these two will be Prince George's godparents. And I also like Thomas van Straubenzee and Hugh van Kutsum for kind of the reasons I've said. Thomas van Straubenzee is William's best friend, and Hugh, it's kind of almost like a repaying the favour type thing, isn't it, with godparents? At 3-1. I like all four of those bets.
Well, definitely. I mean, we're all depending on sort of how many they pick. If they're picking one, there's probably not that much value around. The value is if they're picking sort of seven or eight godparents, and will they go with the traditional sort of close family, Pippa and Prince Harry? To be fair, I think those two are nailed on. It's just a question of who they pick with them. Would they go with a celebrity godparent? Based on what I've seen with the sort of pregnancy and everything, I don't think they go that way. I think they want to try and keep it pretty much as, not low key, but I think they sort of want to keep it sort of family more, and it's not, I think once you start adding the Beckhams in and things like that, then I think it becomes a little bit more of a circus.
I can't really. I mean, I know they are friends with them, and they've got various celebrity friends, but I can't really see it. Can you? It would seem a bit trite. I don't know. Just wouldn't seem quite right if they did that. I think the interesting thing is that there's none of Kate's friends or family in that list. So you know, don't get too carried away by thinking that they're all going to come from that list. Because you know, let's say they have four godparents. So will there be Pippa and Prince Harry, say, you know, then there might only be one of William's and one of Kate's family or friends. So that's worth bearing in mind, I think.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, it's, as I said, I think the first two are nailed on. Thomas van Straubenzee seems the obvious choice, doesn't he, of godparent, of sort of friend godparent on William's side. And obviously we'll wait and see what Kate's got.
Indeed. So have a look at that. That's on the specials pages. One of the markets, I mean, there's all sorts of markets around about, you know, what university Prince George would go to.
What, long wait. Yeah, to one shot to
18
land,
years is an awful long time, isn't it? But I like this one. Which sporting stadium will Prince George first attend? Wembley is 5-2, Olympic Park 9-2, Villa Park 5-1, Emirates 6-1, Twickenham 9s, Lords 10s, the Millennium 12-1, Old Trafford same price, the Oval 20s, Wimbledon tennis 20-1, the Medeski 25, Silverstone 33s, Loftus Road 50-1, Turf Moor. Why did you stick Turf Moor in there?
We stuck Turf Moor in because Prince Charles is a
Burnley fan.
Yeah?
I never
Burnley
knew that. So a sporting event must be taking part in the stadium for the bet to be settled. So, he couldn't just have a little visit to Wembley for a bit of fun in his pushchair. Yeah. I like that. I mean, it still may not land. I mean, you know, he probably wouldn't take a baby to a sporting event, but might not land for a bit, but it's good fun.
I think there's a few that I've got, the sort of Wembley. I know he's sort of quite high up in the FA, isn't he? Or
Prince George?
No, Prince William.
Yeah, is it?
Twickenham, we've seen a bit of money for out of all there. Millennium Stadium, is it? You think it might be a sort of rugby. He's never really shown any interest in the cricket, so you can pass sort of Lords over. Olympic Park, again, depending what the Olympic Park will end up being in a few years, it's going to be a football ground, isn't it? So
you
kind of think that you probably turn over, but it won't be Olympic Park. I can't really see him going to the Emirates either. So, yeah, I think if I was going to have a bet, then I think I'd go for the two rugby grounds, Twickenham and Millennium Stadium.
Fair dues. So have a look at those under the Royal Specials on the Specials tab. Shall we have a look at Spotty? We're pretty much concerning ourselves with the market without Andy Murray still, because we all think Murray is nailed on, as the odds suggest. It's picking that other one, isn't it, Robin? Yeah, and we've been looking down this list, and I can't really be back in front. I mean, despite Froome winning the Tour de France since the last time we spoke on this podcast, something about him that I just don't buy into, and especially at an odds-on price. There was more of a shrug of like, well done, than the scenes that greeted Bradley Wiggins' triumph or Cavendish's exploits in the race and in cycling over recent years. Yeah. Do you think the cycling thing has worn thin a bit now?
I think it's expected. I think when Cavendish won it, I think it was, oh, blimey, we've got a winner of the Tour de France. We've never had one of these. And then
Wiggins, you mean? Yeah.
Cavendish was king of the...
Yeah, he was king of the mountains, whatever
so,
it is.
Um,
It's not King of the Mountains. What is it called? It's called... It's a... Oh, God. Like a polka dot jersey thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a sprint one.
You know, the one where they go really fast.
Yeah. That one.
This is why we do specials and not the Tour de France podcast.
Then we're not doing one. Have we not done a Tour de France?
Yeah, we did one, but not me and you and me.
Oh, yeah. Got for that. Right. Anyway, so, yeah. Cavendish winning. Cavendish won it more on a sort of massive sort of Facebook, Twitter campaign, yep, to be quite honest. Wiggins was more of a... Obviously, the Tour de France, the I think he's won two or three gold medals over the years. So, yeah, that was that. I just don't think Chris Froome's got the... I mean, he started the Tour de France as odds-on favourite. It was all...
I mean, he was the same price to win the Tour de France as he is to finish second in Spotty now, wasn't he? He was 4-6 at the outset, yeah, and he's now, what? Yeah, you know, I say it's the same, 8-11.
I don't know, but then you look and think, you start... We were chatting about this on Monday on In Play Radio, and it's just trying to work out... I mean, Chris Froome's actually won... The fact that he's won something, Justin Rose has won something. As far as at the moment, they're the only two that have done anything, apart from Murray. So you're then looking at Alistair Cook, Jimmy Anderson. Yep, fine, but this cricket has been more of a team effort, and again, I think England have found it a lot easier. 2-0 up in the series, they found it a lot easier than they thought it would be. Lee Halfpenny, again, British Lions, it was more of a team effort. He was probably man of the match in the last game, but apart from that, there wasn't really much else. Carl Froch, he's fighting...
George Groves,
is he in
November?
I think it's November, so he's going to be coming into reckoning with... Obviously, that fight would be...
Boxers just don't do too well, do they? And
well,
do you know what? If that was on...
Do. Obviously, your Frank Bruno and Lennox Lewis have both won.
But they're on terrestrial TV a lot more than weren't they? I think if Carl Froch was on terrestrial TV now, I think... I'm a big boxing fan, but I would be seriously considering having a decent bet on him because he's the sort of guy... he's just a down-to-earth, normal bloke, and he's got a great personality as well.
Joe Calzaghe won, didn't he?
Yeah.
Sports personality without being on...
Bit of a geographical help there as well, maybe?
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I don't know, I mean, Fox's been around for a few years now, and you always think he deserves a little bit more than he's got, so to speak.
You know, I'd still be tempted on a top-three bet on Carl Fox. The difficulty with this market is you're picking the second place.
Yep.
And I think that's the... If these were... Obviously, they wouldn't be the same prices, but, you know, if these were top-three prices, then, you know, for instance, I wouldn't mind backing Froome at 8-11 at top three, but obviously it won't be that price.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a tricky one. When you look... I mean, you made a great point on In Play Radio the other day, Rob, about the fact that if what we believe to be true happens and that, you know, Murray just walks this... And he could get over 50% of the vote. He could get more than that. He could absolutely wipe the floor with everyone. Then the other nine, I presume it's going to go back to a ten shortlist, will be trying to, you know, competing for quite a small percentage of votes. So you might only need you know, just one person to get a decent amount, or even like you said before, an orchestrated campaign.
Well, I think something like 15%. I think wins this.
The second place market.
Yeah, I've got Murray in for anything up to sort of 70%.
Really? That much?
It was prime time. They haven't won it for...
I mean, it is huge, isn't it? There's no good. I mean, you know, I know he won it for... The Olympics was taken into consideration last year, but I think even this year it's going to be lumped... You know, the fact that he won the US and the Olympics last year is still going to get lumped in with this, isn't it?
Rightly or wrongly,
in people's minds.
If he's 2-5 to get a knighthood... Then he's a lot shorter. He's going to win sports personality, isn't he?
Yes.
But there you go. I mean, he deserves.
Fully deserves it. Yeah,
deserves a knighthood. It's another matter for another time. But as far as sports personality, it's probably the most outstanding achievement in British sport, you'd say, for a good sort of 4 or 5 years. It'd have been interesting to know if he'd won Wimbledon last year, if he'd have won sports personality, but... There you go. I think he might have won sports personality last year. I think he would have beaten all the athletes as well. But.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. So, I mean, bigger prices. I mean, I made a little case for Mo Farah, but I don't know. I mean, it's obviously he's obviously a very big price, and it's definitely a possibility. But the fact he didn't win it last year... in Olympic year, I don't know if that's a negative or a positive. I don't know if that's because there were too many other strong candidates, and this year there are less strong candidates.
They all took the vote, didn't they? That was the problem. Especially with Jess came second, didn't she, Jess Ennis?
Yeah.
So I mean, I could have made a case for her at 25, but I'm not. I don't think she's a big price to actually miss the Worlds. The injuries that she's had this year.
Yeah, she's taking part as we record this. She's taking part in the anniversary games, which may I think she's maybe doing that out of.
I think she's doing it more as a desire to test, a sort of glorified fitness test than anything else, isn't she? So.
Just before we move on from that, Robert. I mean, what about a woman in the top three? My thoughts last year were that there had to be a woman in the top three because of what had happened before and all the rest of it. Will that continue? Will there be a little bit of a backlash against that? Do you think?
No, I think Jess deserved a top three for what she did. I think she would have got in a top three whether there'd been a sort of campaign to say why was there no women in the top 10 from 2011, sorry. So, I mean, this year, the truth of the matter is, and I'll probably get emails, no woman at the moment has deserved to be in the top three. To be quite honest, I'm struggling to find a woman who's deserved to be in the top 10.
Yeah, I can't think of it. Yeah, you look at the footballers and they haven't done an awful lot, have they, obviously?
Nothing from a footballer. Laura Robson got a few rounds of Wimbledon, but that's probably not enough to make a shortlist, so...
Just out of interest, the figures last year, Bradley Wiggins won with 30.25% of the vote. Jessica Ennis had 22.92%. Andy Murray, 14% of the vote. And then you had Mo Farah. He was fourth, actually. I was incorrect. 8% of the vote. Then David Weir on 7%. 6% Ali Simmons. 2.5% for Chris Hoy. 2% for Nicola Adams. Ben Ainsley got 2. Just under 2% for Rory McIlroy. Kath Granger got 1.76% and Sarah Story 0.64%. 1.6 million people voted. There won't be that many people voting this year, that's for sure.
No, definitely. I mean, I was just looking back at 2011 because I remember Cavendish being very short to get it, and he won with 49% of the vote. Second was Darren Clark with 12.3%.
That's very similar to what we're going to get this year, isn't it, Rob?
Farah was third with 8.7%. So, yeah. I mean, Farah, the winning the gold medal, he won gold medal in the 5,000, the silver in the 10,000. This was the 2011 World Championship, so you'd think, obviously, he's very strong favourite to win gold in both categories this year. Then maybe Farah at this 40-1 is a bit more value than I thought.
I'm just looking for the 2010 figures actually just to compare and see.
2010 was McCoy, wasn't
it? Yeah, because that was another kind of orchestrated gamble. I know this isn't going to be an orchestrated gamble.
Yeah, I mean,
but
the 2010 gamble was very much down to the fact that it was a very bad winter. We'd lost quite a lot of horse racing, so the Tony McCoy, the sort of at the races and racing UK was really championing. Tony McCoy to win. He won with 41%, but second was Phil Taylor with 10%, and third Ennis with 9%. So, I mean, it's very close. There was only 20,000 votes between second and Tom Daly, who came sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But I think the thinking's right. So anyone out there listening, if you want to start an orchestrated campaign, we can't be any part of it. But on a completely unrelated matter, my Twitter address is @LeePhelps and Rob's is @reality_Rob.
I can't be part of it, but I am allowed to retweet something.
I'm allowed to read a tweet about it.
I'm allowed to retweet and I'm allowed to read it. Yes. That's about it.
Yeah, so but we don't want any part of anything like that.
But yeah, if I go and back Mo Farah at 50-1 with the rival bookmaker, then that would be a good way to start a Twitter campaign, I think.
Mo Farah.
FARAH.
Let's all do the Mobot.
Yeah.
Again. Finally, for today, we promised architecture. The RIBA Sterling Prize 2013 is priced up on the specials pages. This is a prize that's given for the best architecture, and not just in the UK; it's all over the place. This market is full of UK entrants, but some major buildings and structures have won it in the past, from in Rome and in Berlin. And some famous things like the Gherkin have won it before in the UK. This time around, the Bishop Edward Chapel at 5-2 is the favourite. This is an incredible looking. Well, the interior of it is unbelievable looking chapel. It's all kind of white. Almost like a whale. You know when you see those whale bone type things inside of a whale, when you see those outside sometimes. Have you seen that before, Rob? Have you seen one of those?
Oh,
I think it's that kind of shape.
I've seen the pictures.
Yeah. Giant's Causeway. We all know about Giant's Causeway. 3-1. A new Hall B. 100-30. This is a housing estate in Essex which has been transformed. It looks very, very cool. Looks like something from either space or Scandinavia. Very similar.
This is, the one with the colours, isn't it?
And no, that's the Sheffield one, Park Hill Phase One, which is a Park Hill is a was a pretty rundown area of Sheffield, and it's been rejuvenated. These are like two kind of housing estates which have been made to look fantastic. And the downside to those two, I think, when reading about them, is that they've transformed areas exceptionally well. But rather than get, maybe people who need the housing in there, they've obviously, because they're so posh and so nice, they've gone to kind of more upwardly mobile people. So it doesn't really do the job, but maybe it was designed for. Astley Castle is just a castle. And the University of Limerick, not so sure about that. It just looks nice. It's nice, it doesn't look amazing, but... Bishop Edward Chapel is my pick, just looking at the pictures, just because it looks so stunning.
Yeah, Rob. Definitely. It's exceptionally crafted. It is a stone chapel, isn't it? It's I don't know. It's in rural Oxfordshire, so it's a lovely place of the country to live.
Mm.
And the chapel sort of sets it off really nicely.
Yeah.
So
just think if you went along and you were a judging panel, I think you'd be wowed by that.
Yeah,
you'd probably be wowed by New Hall B as well. I mean, check it out on Google Images.
New Hall B looks nice.
Yeah. I'd like to live there.
I don't know.
Looks like a ski resort. That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
It does, but they just look like sort of dark coloured boxes. They have different colour boxes, don't they? Then?
Oh, you donkey.
I know.
Not you.
I
was talking about an Arsenal forward who just, think it might have been, who was it? Of course it was. Walcott.
Yeah, Walcott.
Only the keeper to beat. Had to go round him, slot it in for two goals. I've backed Arsenal to score three. Or more, and the keeper got it. Idiot. Yeah. I'll concentrate on the job.
Back to New Orbe, I just think they're sort of courtyard-type houses, aren't they? I just can't imagine living it. I'd like to see what they look like inside.
I would as well, I bet they've got loads of, mod cons and environmental things.
Park Hill, for me, my architectural knowledge just says it just looks like a block of houses. They've just stuck a few coloured bits in. I've been on the train to London and a few times recently, and I've seen these sort of North London sort of tower blocks and put a bit of colour in it and meant to look nicer than they are, but they're not. So it divides opinion, I think, Park Hill's too much. I think you're either going to love it or loathe it, aren't you? So in fact, it's in Sheffield as well, doesn't really help its cause. University of Limerick Medical School. Again.
Looks all right, doesn't it? But it's not nothing,
It looks all right, isn't it? But, it's probably the cheapest. It was the cheapest of all of them to build. So it's designed to create a powerful sense of place.
Mm.
So whatever. Blue-grey limestone. These are all available on site. And the last one's obviously the Giant Causeway Visitor Centre, which you can see from miles away, can't you?
In Ireland. So, 5-2, worth a go, isn't it? Bishop Edward Chapel.
Yep, Bishop Edward
I think it's
Edward
a fair
Chapel.
Price.
What are we now? 9-2?
5-2.
5-2.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that's a decent price. I mean, I think it's about right, actually. I don't think you're not getting any kind of amazing value, but I think it's a decent price. And
yeah, I mean, the Fabs have got a very good record in this. Mm. I think we're one outsider.
They tend to be very south-centric as well, Rob. I know Oxford's not London, but there's been a lot of winners in the capital and around the south of England. There's been a couple in Cambridge as well.
It's a good one to sort of market, isn't
it?
So,
yeah. Closer for the judges. You know, they don't want to be traipsing them to Sheffield, do they?
No one wants to traipse to Sheffield. Before I've upset the rest of Sheffield.
Yeah, don't worry about that. It's fine. I think that'll do us, Rob.
Yes, are we done?
What have we done now? No, we've done about 30 minutes there, I reckon.
Half hour, that's not too bad.
Wowzers.
We only had a chance to talk about FHM Sexiest Woman, 50 Shades of Grey, the Man Booker Prize over Rose of Tralee.
Do Man Booker Prize next week.
Yeah.
Good.
I like a book.
Yeah, I like a book. Do we offer odds on the William Hill book?
No.
What,
no.
Are we not allowed?
No, we're not allowed to.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. Very good. It's the anniversary this year, isn't it?
Is it 25 years?
25 years, I think I might be doing a few interviews with some of the previous winners, which would be nice. That's what I was asking. it doesn't matter. I don't want to get into trouble. with anyone, or get you into trouble with anyone. So no. we're already trying to orchestrate a Twitter campaign to get a Spotty winner.
Oh yeah, it's Mo Farah. Yeah,
we're not. We're joking. We wouldn't do that.
I've just realised we're top price Mo Farah as well. So
okay,
there you go.
It won't be for long.
It won't be for long. But yeah. If we could just change the 40-1 to 20-1 for all parts of the podcast, we'd be fine, won't we?
No problem. Rob, have a great weekend.
Yes, you too.
And we will speak to you very soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.